Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Royals.
And gone!
Trust the same experts who make the right call for the Royals and go to kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez on this Monday, September 27, 2021. Thanks to Todd Lebo, Gary Lezak, and Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star for coming on the show. 9:30, we'll talk to Adam Teicher from ESPN, but right now we'll talk to one of our NFL and Chiefs analysts, former Chiefs defensive lineman Bill Moss joins us. Bill, good morning. How are you?
What's up, SSJ? What's up, Nate? Hey, you guys, are you at the point where you have to thank Lebo for coming on with you guys now?
Yeah, I beg him to come on the show.
Okay.
He's a red ass.
You know the kind of ego he has, Bill? He demands that we throw rose petals at his feet at all times.
He's going to have that ego stroked every time he comes on
and
the show.
And you can tell these guys don't listen to me because I say, screw Lebo. I don't want to book him every week.
Right. He's a big get for Jake. Bill, man, I don't even know where to start. First and foremost, it's hopefully Andy Reid is okay, because that's bigger than any football game result or anything like that. That was certainly scary to hear that. And I know that Jay Glazer, he's one of the best NFL insiders and reporters, he said that it was heart palpitations that caused Andy to go to the hospital afterwards. Yeah. The Chiefs have said dehydration, and he needed to be checked out at the University of Kansas Health System, and so he left in an ambulance after the game. That's all we know, but boy, that's before anything having to do with the game. Hopefully Andy Reid is okay.
Yeah, no doubt. And I guess they're calling it dehydration. Now, I don't know if you've ever had that before.
Yes.
I've had it, and I've had altitude sickness. And the first thing that happens to you is your heart starts racing and pounding really hard. And I've had it, and it feels like I thought at one time, I'm like, uh-oh. Here comes the big one, right?
Right.
And I was dehydrated. And so I'm sure yesterday when it fluctuated during the week from, cool weather to 90 plus on the turf standing there, and he's got that big rubber coat on, I could see that happening.
Yeah, 91 degrees out there. And like you said, just that's a recipe for dehydration right there. And hopefully that's all it is, and he'll be okay, and he'll be back to coaching next week against Philadelphia. But there's a lot of different ways we can break down this game, but the bottom line is this: when you turn the football over four times and you don't get any turnovers, it's almost impossible to win.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're just three games in and they've got six turnovers. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds right. They have four in this one, and they had two last game, right? Because Mahomes threw a pick and Edwards let it fumble. So just in the last two games, they've had six.
Right. So and that's you can't bank on winning when you make turnovers. But I think it's really a credit to the NFL and what I'm seeing. Like, I'm not just talking about the Chiefs. What I'm seeing across the NFL, it's really unbelievable how the league can find a way to come back. The Chiefs, everyone knows, everyone believes, we've got some of the greatest talent ever assembled, right? But when you're playing them 3 years in a row and you know you have to face them, and you find ways. You find ways to get better. It pushes the envelope for other teams to get better. And you're seeing that. And we could be 0-3 or we could be 3-0. It's a couple points away, a couple plays away, and to me, that's a credit to the league.
Just look at this division now. You've got now the Broncos. Their schedule has been very weak. The Giants, the Jags, and the Jets, but they're still 3-0. To your point, the Raiders are 3-0. Easily could be 1-2. They have overtime victories over the Ravens. And that was a thrilling game against the Colts yesterday. And then you got the Chargers, who lost their only game. And how long was their line's kick? 56. They lost on a 56-yard field goal. Hell, yeah. Yesterday we saw the Ravens win a game on a 66-yard field goal, and the freaking football hit the crossbar. and still went through. And so, yes, you're right, but the one thing you take away from this, the AFC West is a really good division, better than it has been top to bottom in several years.
Yeah, and so things play themselves out, or things work themselves out, and this will happen. I'm sure there's a lot of Chiefs fans, you know, ready to jump off the ledge right now, but it'll work itself out, and the cream will rise. But this is obviously a very talented division, but the cream will rise, and it's just going to take them time. I would say that the one thing that would bother me is last week when they launched, it was like, okay, we needed a wake-up call. This is it. We're ready now. And Steve Spagnuolo practiced. They answered back. You should have seen the way these guys battled and played. And I didn't see that Sunday. I didn't see any of that speak that they were talking about. I didn't see that on the field. And so that's the one thing I would look at. I told you week one, Stephen. I said, Patrick Mahomes will make you lazy. He'll make the rest of the team, coaches, everybody lazy. And, you know, that's the one thing I would just keep an eye on. They think they can pull the rabbit out of the hat all the time again, and that's not the case. They've got to get back, and they have to change a few things, how they approach games.
You know, Bill, that's really an interesting point you make, because we saw the footage after the third turnover of Mahomes lighting the offense up on the sideline. And that's not typically the type of, you know, he's obviously a very engaged leader with the team, but the imagery we usually see from him on the sideline is like last year in the playoffs when Mecole Hardman fumbled that punt and he was down on himself and Mahomes came over and was like talking him up like, hey, man, yeah, you're going to make a play. Don't go away on me. He was like, you know, building him back up. This was like a pissed off Patrick Mahomes getting on everybody. And they did seem to respond at least offensively once that happened, but I'm just curious what you think of Mahomes kind of showing that side of his leadership as opposed to that positivity we normally see from him.
Yeah, I think there's a few things. I mean, I think the three young guys inside. I think the mistakes being made. I'm watching sloppy football, is what I'm watching, and it's just not the Chiefs though. You know, I see it around the league. Just attention to details, the little things, the little nuances. I mean, not getting lined up correctly, not getting lined up in time, not substituting correctly, not substituting on time. Just things that should be handled. And I don't know if that's a product of the fixed allotment of time you have to practice because of the collective bargaining agreement and the union, but it just seems like the little things that should be football 101, sometimes they're just getting left to the side. And like I said, it's not just a Chiefs problem. I see it league-wide.
Hey, the Chargers had two illegal shift penalties, which is just something as simple as making sure that you don't have two guys in motion right at the snap. And yeah, it cost them a touchdown at one point. And Tony, yep, Romo was talking about how they did it last week, too. So, yeah, like, do you think the shortened preseason has anything to do with that as well, like the fewer preseason games?
Yeah, all of it combined. I mean, when you're facilitating the product for them to take a breath and to be a little bit, the pressure's not on all the time. And when the pressure's on all the time, you respond to pressure. When you don't have that, you see, you know, kind of what you're seeing now. But the Chiefs need to find a way to turn their attention to what they have here right now. They've got a division that if they need to get to the playoffs, if they want to get to the playoffs, they've really got to hone in and take charge of things. The defense, in my opinion, I see no pass rush whatsoever, none, unless they blitz. And that's, you don't want to leave these guys out on an island one-on-one and do that. So I would try to take one of the defensive ends, the backup guys, and coach them up well enough to play to be an edge rusher. I would put Chris Jones back down over the guard in a three technique, and I put Nadi at the one technique. What I saw happen to Nadi and Derek Reed yesterday, I mean, that's unacceptable football, period. You can't end up in the linebacker's lap 2-3 yards deep. You can't. And that's so I would make a change there and try to coach up one of the defensive ends to come on to be and move Chris Jones back inside.
So again, because I think that's an important point, you've seen enough of the Chris Jones defensive end experiment. Frank Clark comes back. Mike Dana has had some moments. You've got a veteran like Okafor. Yep. So you've seen enough. Put Jones back inside and go with what you have at defensive end.
Yeah, just because of the fact of what's happening to the inside. And look, the best way for Chris Jones to get to the quarterback is the shortest path, in my opinion. And he belongs inside. He's disruptive. He always has been disruptive. He doesn't. Yeah, the outside thing to me is I think that's over.
So we saw Mike Dana get a lot of snaps yesterday. Do you see enough from him? I mean, Frank Clark's going to come back eventually from the hamstring. Do you see enough from Mike Dana where he could be that guy that could step up in that role?
I think so. Or switch him out. You know, just rotate him through. Get Wharton in there. Get Okafor. But get Chris Jones back down inside. And I think that's going to be better for your defense all around. Look, Willie Gay isn't fixing this thing. Okay, I mean there's a lot more to it than that. I really like flashes I've seen from Nick Bolton, but Willie Gay is one guy isn't fixing this defense. There's got to be a couple changes made. I think that's where you start.
Okay, you were talking about substitutions and not being organized. Anthony Hitchens after the game.
Oh, did you see that?
Yeah.
How about him?
So he was talking about this. He said the Chargers and there was a hurry up tempo inside the red zone. They had an easy touchdown pass and then the 2-point conversion. He said they did a late substitution. The rule is we should be able to sub. Obviously, they didn't see that part. They substitute real quick. By the time we did, a lot of guys weren't on the same page. As a middle linebacker, I take fault in all that because I'm the one setting everybody up. If I don't get a call from Spagnuolo, I need to get a call out there so we can play something. I'll be better in the future with getting my guys ready in the red zone quicker. Once teams see this, they're just going to copycat. So he's insinuating that he didn't get the call from Spagnuolo, and also guys got out there and they weren't on the same page. Didn't know what to do. Is that, he first blamed the officials. Is that on the officials, or is that totally on the Chiefs? They have to get themselves in a situation where they're ready for that, and they're not confused when they get on the field, and they're getting the call in on time.
Yeah, a couple things. If you want to talk about officiating, we could talk all day about that.
Please.
I thought it was bad yesterday, even all the way to the last play, pass interference. There was a lot of things missed. But as a coach, you prepare your team for everything. They didn't look like they were prepared for the quick count, okay? They didn't look like they were prepared last week for the overshift on the offensive line, right? They never made their shift. There's a lot of little things I saw that everybody's responsible when you take a loss like that. Everybody. I mean, coaches, players, you have to be over-prepared. And again, is it, you're telling me it's the two-hour practice rule? I don't know, but you have to be prepared, and anything that comes in like that where your guys on the field aren't substituting correctly or your guys on the field don't get the call in, that's on the coaches, okay? That's the only – you're the guys that prepare everything during the week. You're the ones that are facilitating everything you anticipate you think is going to happen come game day. You need to get your guys ready.
I'm just spitballing here because I don't really understand how it works in the week of preparation. But listening to Spagnuolo talk this week, he talked about that. We're trying a couple wrinkles in the red zone. Is it possible that they just spent so much time trying to fix their own problems that they didn't spend enough time worrying about what the Chargers might bring?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, but it certainly looked like to me that what the Chargers wanted to do, okay, offensively and defensively, they were much more prepared by their coaches and their coaching staff than the Chiefs were. From every decision made, from everything they did inside the red zone, defensively, offensively, from the decision to, like, pull the kicker out of there. But I don't think it had anything to do with the win. They pulled the kicker out of there because he missed the extra point, and he's a head case, right? But the way the quarterback was playing, I would have rode that pony too, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, I said earlier, there's not a whole lot of fourth down situations where I wouldn't go for it against the Chiefs right now. Because that's like a dark cloud hanging over them because they failed in multiple situations with a game on the line on fourth down. And so since you brought up officiating, let's talk about that fourth and nine play. And again, people around the NFL, you know, shocked that they go for a fourth and nine. You watch the game, you watch the Chiefs defense, of course you're going to go for it on fourth and nine. But was that pass interference? CBS didn't find it important enough to offer a replay. So I can't tell you, you know, I had a great look at it, but what did you think of that call? Because that did help decide the game.
Yeah, it was. From what I saw, I didn't see pass interference. You know, so I don't know where it came from. Maybe it was on the other side of the field. Maybe I don't know. You know, and I think that's the thing, that with that many cameras at a you know, the number one game of the day, that's who gets the most cameras. You should have multiple shots of that, even an all 22 shot of it, to see what they did. And then you should be able to overturn it if it wasn't there, right?
You would think.
Well, I mean, their announcer, Tony Romo, said he didn't think it was pass interference. You know, you think they would respond to it just from that standpoint, that the one of their announcers is calling out, hey, I think a bad call was made right here. But they – did you think that the Chiefs could have gotten a pass interference call on a couple of those plays at the end of the game, like the pass to Tyreek Hill?
To Travis Kelce. I saw contact made numerous times in that game while the ball was in the air. And there's six things that constitute DPI, defensive pass interference. There's six, right? Contact before the ball gets there, arm bar, around the back, playing through the back of the receiver, all right? And I saw contact, I don't know, three or four times while the ball was in the air. I was like, wow, I don't get it. And in the last play of the game, there was contact on Kelce while the ball was in the air. Took him down to the ground.
So very rarely do you see pass interference called on a Hail Mary attempt, but that was pass interference on, I mean, they tackled Hill and Kelce pretty much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to get that call, are you?
I think it all has to do with what crew is working what game and what they go by. You know, play can't end, the clock can't end on a defensive penalty. It could have been, you know, one more play at the goal line for the Chiefs. It would have ended it all.
Well, Bill, this weekend they play at Philadelphia. We'll see Philadelphia on Monday Night Football tonight. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is obviously they don't want to start 1-3. There's many things they need to take care of and work on this week. What's the most important?
You know, I think just kind of hit the reset button. You have your coach's health in hand. I think you just hit the reset button. I really do. I said, okay, guys, we're starting all over, and we're going to go to Philadelphia, get this win. Concentrate on the things we do well. I do think it's important that Andy and the offense, Eric Bieniemy, they find a different way to do things offensively. There's a reason they kept four tight ends coming out of training camp, and Andy knew it. He knew it. You're going to ride what got you to the Super Bowl. You have Tyreek Hill that's going to blow the top off of any defense and stretch the field vertically. You have Kelce underneath. We don't have a second receiver. None has stepped up yet. But those four tight ends in the mix, and they can all bring a little something to the table. Andy has had success with two tight end sets every place he's been. He did it in Green Bay with Mark Chmura and Keith Jackson. He did it in Philadelphia. He had two All-Pros, Selleck and Chad Lewis, okay? So he loves those packages. And what those packages do, it dictates what you're going to do with your two safeties and how you're going to play them. So it's a different game than what we're seeing now. What we're seeing now is just too deep coverage, and we're going to take Tyreek Hill away, and you guys figure it out after that. I think it might be time for a little bit of a change offensively, too, and sprinkle some of those sets in with the two tights.
Yeah, and Fortune had a nice touchdown catch yesterday, so yeah, I think he deserves more looks. That's a matchup problem.
Yep.
Bill, good talking to you, man. Hopefully we'll be talking about a win next Monday after the play in Philadelphia, but either way, we'll talk to you next Monday.
Have a good one, guys. Appreciate it.
You too. That's Bill Moss. Excellent analysis from Bill Moss. That's why we have him on the show. And just to show it's not just Chiefs fans bitching about this, I saw Brandon Kiley tweet out a video of the Hail Mary at the end. And we all agree they don't throw flags on Hail Marys. Hardly ever, right?
No.
So then Terry McCauley retweets the video. And he's a veteran NFL referee. And he's the one that explains or breaks down the rules behind the biggest plays on Sunday Night Football on NBC, right? So he retweeted and said, did you see what he said?
No.
Do you know what he said, Jake? What do you guess the former NFL referee that breaks down and analyzes all the calls on Sunday Night Football said? What do you think he said?
Blown. Could have been a pass interference on both sides.
Blown call. Missed call. Phantom.
He said, I'm talking about the Hail Mary at the end.
Oh, okay.
When Kelce and Tyreek Hill got basically mugged on the field.
Well, I agree with Bill Moss. Probably there's PI on Kelce.
This is what Terry McCauley said. There is no scenario where this is not a foul for defensive pass interference.
Wow.
I didn't expect him to say that. I thought he'd say, well, you know, you could call it on everyone, and that's Hail Mary, blah, blah, blah. No, he said, there is no scenario where there is not a foul for defensive pass interference. So, I don't know what that's worth to you. But, I mean, you look at it. I mean, he's literally holding on to Tyreek Hill for the final 5 yards. You just, as football fans, we're conditioned never to expect a flag on a Hail Mary attempt, right? But so then why just tackle everyone then? Well, Nate,
it's a free for all.
You're a play-by-play man. Explain describe what you're seeing there. I mean, you're.
Yeah, it's absolutely pass interference.
He's got him in an arm bar the whole way.
Yeah, well, the other guy is got literally both arms wrapped around Travis Kelce as he takes him to the ground.
It's like if that's the Chiefs, then they throw the flag. Penalty.
There's seven flags. There's right. Like.
It's all, and they're all on Sorensen, and he wouldn't be within 10 yards of the play.
It's
like what happened, and the reference I'm making is, of course, on the penalty on the 4th and 9 play, they called it on Sorensen, and he wasn't there. That wasn't him. It was DeAndre Baker.
Well, they could have called 2 pass interferences against the Chargers before that Hail Mary on that drive, and they didn't. But the Chiefs also could have not turned it over 4 times, you know, so.
Right. Let's talk to Adam Teicher.
It's like
then.
You always say in boxing,
what
you don't
do
want to leave it in the hands of the judges, right?
I've never said that one time. You're making stuff up now. I always leave it in the hands of the judges because they're all correct and they are not corrupt.
That's right. I take it back. I got that twisted.
Well, I thought after Usyk clearly outboxed Joshua in front of 70,000 people, I'm like, oh, they're gonna screw him. They're gonna screw him. And the one judge from England had it closer than everyone. He tried. Like in the first game, he was giving rounds to Joshua, looking at the scorecard that he wasn't. You know, like come on. But Usyk was so dominant, everyone gave him the final 4 rounds. So
yeah, even the corrupt ass judges.
Yeah,
couldn't.
He's like, sorry, you didn't land a punch. I
can only go so far.
We will talk to Adam Teicher after this on WHB.